Meeting to order. First of all, we have the Central Corridor. Peter Bell, Chairman of the Metropolitan Council, will begin.
Senator Langseth, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here with you this morning to provide a brief overview of the Central Corridor rail system. As all of you know, this will be actually the third system we will be developing, the first being the Hiawatha Light Rail Line, the second being the North Star Commuter Rail Line, and this would be the third system that we would have in the metropolitan area. As the overhead slide indicates where the corridor would run now, as we envision it and as we have presented to the FTA, the Federal Transit Administration, right now it would be 11 miles, has 16 stations. The time for the 11-mile run would be 35 minutes. We're looking at about 7.5-minute frequency, 31 vehicles, and projected weekday riders, we'd be at about 38,000 by 2020 and 43,000, as you can see, by 2030. It is really going to be building upon what I think is broadly accepted as a tremendous success for the Hiawatha light rail line. Right now, we're at about 28,000 riders a day. That exceeds our projections, as it says in the overhead that we had for 2020. We're at about, 150% of what our projections were. One thing that we're also proud of is 40% of the riders are new transit riders. So they are new to our system, and that's something that we're also very proud of. There's a great deal of discussion, Mr. Chair, on transit-oriented development. We have seen this around the country, and we're seeing this here as well, that a great deal of development accompanies transit. And at the Hiawatha line, as you can see, we have 5,400 new housing units constructed and 7,000 more in the planning stages. This will do nothing but, of course, drive continued ridership on our system. Let's go to the next slide. One of the things to manage the development of the Central Corridor, we went back and looked at the management structure that was used in the Hiawatha light rail line, and essentially we're replicating that. There is, quite candidly, Mr. Chair, some conflicting legislative authority between the Minnesota Department of Transportation and the Metropolitan Council, and we are working closely with MnDOT. We have an agreement with MnDOT where the Met Council will build, own, and operate the Central Corridor. That's a very important point, that we will have authority by virtue of the working or the agreement that we developed with the Minnesota Department of Transportation to build, own, and operate it. As you can see in the center of the slide, we have set up a Central Corridor Management Committee, and this management committee really is comprised of all of our key partners. For instance, Mr. Chair, we have the mayor of Minneapolis, the mayor of St. Paul, two Ramsey County commissioners, one commissioner from Hennepin County, as well as representatives from MnDOT and the University of Minnesota. While we, the Met Council, reserves the right to make the final decisions about the Central Corridor line, the Corridor Management Committee will be the major group that provides input to us. And this slide illustrates all of the people that, or all of the agencies and units of government that serve on that. Let's go back one slide. I just want to talk. We also have a community advisory committee. This is a very important group. It is a very large group to make sure that we have adequate community input into the Central Corridor. One of the things that I think it is very important that we hear and listen to a wide range of community issues and concerns. There are very legitimate concerns, Mr. Chair, about parking, about business mitigation, about station design. And the Community Advisory Committee is really the place where we will address those issues. We have a Central Corridor Project Office. This is primarily of technical staff. And then we have a Central Corridor Partnership and a Business Advisory Council. Those two groups really are dealing with either business interests in downtown St. Paul or business interests along the corridor itself. And again, those are our partners. Let's move on. As you can see here, this restates some of the things I just said. The Community Advisory Committee has 42 members. It meets monthly. The Business Advisory Committee is led by the Central Corridor Partnership, and it represents 20, or has 20 business representatives, and dates are yet to be determined. Another important point, Mr. Chair, is the land use planning. That's an important issue about any transit system. It is something that the FTA, the Federal Transit Administration, is also has a strong interest in. And both the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul will be taking the lead in the land use planning. We will be working closely with them, but that they will be the lead agencies regarding that. We have had presentations in the Corridor Management Committee on land use planning processes that each of the cities and the university will be meeting about a month ago, and we will be working very, very closely with them on that. There's going to be the staff coordination, of course, is the FTA project management, working with the FTA, which pays 50% of the costs, is very, very important. The staff coordination will be involved with the project advisory committees. We have a communication steering committee. Communication regarding the Central Corridor is very important to the general public, and communication regarding the Central Corridor with our respective partners is very important, and then the land use coordinating efforts as well. Key positions, the project director is Mark Furman. The deputy director is Rich Rovang. We are going to have managers for design, public involvement, administration, construction, vehicle design, and procurement, and project controls. And these positions, some of which have been filled and some of which are in the process of being filled. For instance, public involvement is Robin Kaufman. And again, I mentioned to you who the project director, Mark Furman, will be. And Mark was very instrumental both with the Hiawatha Light Rail Line as well as North Star. So he has a great deal of expertise on that. The time frame, prepare the DEIS, the draft environmental impact statement, is complete. As I mentioned, we have been approved to go into preliminary engineering. I was out in Washington yesterday meeting with members of our congressional delegation and meeting with the head of the FTA regarding various aspects of preliminary engineering. That is a two-year process. It costs $45 million. That process has taken longer than previously because the feds want to make sure that adequate due diligence is done in this phase. We then enter into final design. We estimate the cost of that as being $38 million, and then we apply for the full funding grant agreement and begin construction, and we look at that cost as being $849 million. One thing I think it is important to add at this point is that the total project cost right now we estimate as being about $932 million, and we think through the process of preliminary engineering we are going to need to get that cost down.
Does that include underground at the university or above ground?
It does. It does. That includes underground in the university. Okay. The $932 million includes the tunnel under the University of Minnesota. It is my back of the envelope sense, Mr. Chair, and it's only that, that we're going to have to get the cost from about $932 million to somewhere between $810 and $820 to meet the federal, the FTA's requirements that will secure 50% funding for capital. They pay no cost for operating, but 50% of the capital costs. I think we got to go at least from the 932, and actually we're a little bit above that, and I'll explain that in the middle in a minute, to the 810 to 820 to secure those matching dollars. In preliminary engineering, when people say to me, Peter, what are you considering that, that may need to be reduced or eliminated or put into a phase two, would be the tunnel under the University of Minnesota. That's at a cost of $155 million. There is some discussion of stopping at 4th Street and not going all the way to the depot. If we don't do that, that would save $72 million. And then there's a great deal of reconstruction along University Avenue that would be at $55 million. There may be, Senator Lang, Seth, members of the committee, other things that will come out in preliminary engineering that we will look at as well. But when you're at the 932 and you got to get to the 810, 820, these are the big chunks of things that we will be looking at. What you see on the slide now, when we apply to get into preliminary engineering, the phase that we have been allowed in, the feds got back to us, the FTA, and said that the 932 figure is too low. They said that we think you need to consider other things as well. And here are some of the other things. Additional light rail vehicles, $39 million. They think, in part, because of the tremendous success of the Hiawatha light rail line, that we should have three-car platforms and prepare for that. They think that we need a storage facility, and they think we need to revise our inflation rate. When you add those things to the 932, you're north of $1 billion for the project. And again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, please remember, I think we got to get to about 810, and with these, we're over $1 billion. So we're going to have to make some very difficult decisions with this line in order to bring it into reality. Additional issues are station placement and design. These are very important and appropriately and understandably so for the community groups along University Avenue and at the University of Minnesota. Accessibility is something very, very important, particularly to the disabled community. Traffic signals and intersections, we want to do a better job, frankly, than we did with Hiawatha in getting that right. Construction's impact in mitigating business disruption is a very real concern, and understandably so to the businesses along University Avenue, and parking issues are also very important. And here is a simulation of the line. This is heading east on University toward Fairview Avenue. About 2 minutes in length.
Slow down, you're going too fast.
I'm getting dizzy.
Love it.
Yes, I believe Ramsey County put this together.
You're going to be able to change tracks like that?
Mr. Chair and members, you'll see some of the buildings are actual buildings along University Avenue right now, so you can get a good sense of how this is going to work. We'll be coming up by, I believe, Porky's here in a minute on the right-hand side. But one of the things that we can't do with the simulation is that we couldn't, I mean, obviously you'll see how the trains work with the cars in the roadway. However, we couldn't get the simulation to work with the cars actually moving. So you'll see that the cars are sitting. And that's just to demonstrate a transit advantage.
Well, Mr. Chair, I recognized an old car I traded off, and it didn't move when I sold it either.
you can see now in the foreground there is the or in the background there is the University and Snelling intersection way up the road there. The train will start picking up pace here, and just gives you a decent idea how the train will work within the roadway with the two lanes on both sides. And as Ramsey County just reminds me, with no loss of parking.
Joe.
Except the cars are parked in the roadway.
Except for the cars parked in the roadway. There are a number of Porsches in this simulation as well.
Mr. Chair, I'd stand for questions.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Mr. Bell. You know, so you're saying that the federal government is telling you that you have to lower your costs by $100 million, but they're also telling you that your estimates are too low.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley, they have not said that we have to reach the figure that I mentioned, the 810 to 820. It's just when you look at the cost effectiveness index and you apply it and you apply the math, very crudely stated, that's about where you have to go. But your general statement is correct. They're saying you need to add these costs in, and you still need to meet their cost effectiveness index. And the cost effectiveness index is a way by which the feds essentially separate the wheat from the chaff. It's a queuing mechanism. As you would anticipate, there are many more transit projects across the country looking for federal dollars than there are federal dollars. And so it's a way that they prioritize and separate out one project from another.
Okay, we do have a couple other people to testify, so if there's no further questions here, Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Chairman Bell, I have two questions. One is, as you know, for some time I've been concerned about the amount of time that it will take this light rail car to get from downtown Minneapolis to downtown St. Paul. And, you know, maybe by the time we get it built, driving won't be that as short an endeavor, which would mitigate my concern then. But especially when it's not rush hour, you can drive from Minneapolis to St. Paul in a much shorter period of time than it's going to take this light rail to travel that distance. And so I think my concern is that, especially when it's not rush hour, that it will have somewhat of a dampening effect on the ridership on the light rail. So I'm wondering if there has been any consideration given to reducing the number of stops along the way.
Senator Langseth, Senator Berglund, that is one of the issues that we will take up in preliminary engineering. You have, Senator Berglund, raised that concern with me in the past. Quite candidly, much of the pressure that we are receiving, comments we're receiving, go in the opposite direction. People want more stations and, you know, different things, which, of course, would aggravate the problem that you are concerned about. But these are estimates that we have for the time that it would take. And these issues are really what the whole process of preliminary engineering is for, is to work those through.
Mr. Chairman and Chairman Bell, I know that there's a lot of pressure to add stations. When we did the light rail corridor for Hiawatha, we had that same type of pressure. And the second question I have is related to having this corridor be on an operational street. And is there any plan for some kind of a barrier between the track right-of-way and the street? I know myself, just whenever I try to avoid it at any cost, but whenever I have to drive on 5th Street downtown Minneapolis, it's pretty unnerving to be having these light rail cars, you know, so close to the traffic.
Senator Langseth, Senator Berglund, I think I'm going to defer to perhaps Mark Furman, the project manager, to address that technical question.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, Mark Furman, Central Corridor Project Director. The light rail, as you saw in the simulation, will be an embedded track in the middle of Central of University Avenue. And there is no contemplated physical barrier between the two through lanes of traffic and the light rail, similar to Fifth Street, similar to the short segment of Hiawatha for a couple blocks on Minnehaha Avenue, just north of the VA hospital.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just want to express concern about that. This is obviously a much longer distance, and you know, it's not inconceivable for cars to get off of their right-of-way and onto the light rail right-of-way when you've got that kind of traffic competing with each other. So I just want to express that concern.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Bell, I'm concerned about the potential subtraction of the extension or the line going all the way to the Union Depot. And I was wondering if you could comment on the how seriously you're considering taking off the extension or the line to proceed all the way to the Union Depot. From my perspective and others, if you don't extend the line all the way to the Union Depot, it will also put into jeopardy some of the other projects that are anticipated to connect into the Union Depot and therefore affecting sort of the transportation plan for transit for the entire East Metro, Eastern Metropolitan area.
Senator Langseth, Senator Sieben, many have expressed the concern of that you have shared about going to the depot and having a transit hub there. We have made, and I want to be very clear about this, no decisions about this. It's only when I make the point that we need to get the costs down from where I see them at now as slightly over $1 billion to the 810 to the 820 area. People naturally say, well, Peter, how might you do that? And so I think it is only fair to give some examples of that. The position that I've taken is that in the corridor management, while it's the Met Council's decision to determine this ultimately, in the corridor management committee, we have representatives from Ramsey County, the City of St. Paul, Hennepin County, Minneapolis, the university, and the other partners that I spoke about, and that we will go through the process, the costs and the benefits of all of this. The second point I would hasten to add is that if that were decided, and I'm not prejudging or handicapping this at all, the going to the extension to the depot could be a phase two. That's essentially what we did with going to the Mall of America with Hiawatha, and we could do it in that context. Now, that some folks are understandably uncomfortable with that and don't want to wait for that, and I'm very appreciative and sensitive to that concern, but that doesn't mean that it would never happen. That's really what my point is.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bell, maybe you already went over this, but what's the cost from University Avenue down to the depot, and then also what's the cost of the tunnel with the university?
Yeah.
Senator Langseth, Senator Murphy, I do not have the cost from the university to the depot. I have the cost from 4th Street to the depot. So that portion is $72 million. The tunnel under the university is $155 million. Dollars. And so when you look at those kind of figures and where we're at and where we need to get,
Mr. Bell, can you explain what is all involved or the plan for the tunnel over at the university?
Senator Langseth, Senator Murphy, the tunnel under the University of Minnesota would go in front of Kauffman Union. Incidentally, it's important to add that hooking up to the new Gopher Stadium has resulted in some increased costs for this as well, because we do intend to hook up into the Gopher Stadium. That going under the university would be right in front of Kauffman Union, and then it would come out by the gallery there and then go across the Washington Avenue Bridge. The university argues that it is for safety reasons, for traffic management reasons, and I think that they would also argue in part for aesthetic reasons that it's important to have that tunnel. And like the depot, I have shared with them that they have a seat on the corridor management committee and that their interests and concerns will be heard in the context of that cost effectiveness index and getting the cost down to do the project.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Bell, answer me this. Is it true or is it not true that you would have to take a elevator down to a plaza level, get off that elevator, and get on another elevator to go down to the train level?
Senator Langseth, Senator Murphy, I'm going to bring up Mr. Furman to answer the questions. I don't want to state something I'm not 100% sure of.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, we haven't done the detailed design, but typically these sorts of stations are likened to the Lindbergh station for the Hiawatha line, where there will be we'll call it the street access, there will then be a mezzanine level access, and then ultimately the platform level access. And there would be ADA elevator access between all three of those to get folks down to the platform.
Hey, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to acknowledge the massive amount of, we'll call it diplomatic efforts, that are going to be required from Mr. Bell and his staff to take a line from Minneapolis to St. Paul and deal with members of Congress, two cities, two counties, state legislators, the governor. It might be easier to find Middle East peace than for you to do this and to cut $100 or $200 million here or there. But I wanted to thank Mr. Bell for his openness. I know several interested parties and constituents have felt that you are open and ready to talk about this at any time. And I suspect it's only going to get more difficult. And good luck.
Senator Langseth, Senator Michelle, thank you very much.
We're going to have to move along. There's two more testifying on this. Rafael Ortega, Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority. Okay. And I don't know, maybe you wanted Larry Dowell, is that the name, at the same time, or is he going to come separately? Okay. Might just as well both sit there anyway. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you to the committee for allowing me to speak to you today on behalf of Ramsey County. I'll make it short. I'll make sure I won't go through the notes that were prepared because you've heard it before. But very quickly, I do want to make some comments, and that is that Ramsey County, along with Hennepin County, have been working on this line for a very long time. And most recently during my tenure for the last 10 years. And indeed, we've come to a good place, both with the Central Corridor and the Union Depot. We at Ramsey County have done what we need to do to levy the appropriate taxes in order to bond for our share, both for the capital and the operating. And so I'm here to make a request. But before I do that, I want to make one thing very clear, because I think we need to start laying the cards on the table. As far as Ramsey County is concerned, we have a huge investment in the Union Depot. We have received $50 million from the federal government for that depot, plus and other allocations. We have levied for that depot. We are in the midst now of finalizing the negotiations for the completing the purchase of that entire post office property. The Union Depot is critical to the Red Rock Corridor, to the Roberts Street Corridor, to high-speed rail, to the Rush Line for the East Metro area. And most recently, we've been in discussions with Central Western Wisconsin, and they're talking about how those Eau Claire and those places connect to the depot. And I just want to be very honest here and put the cards on the table because it keeps eluding me. There should be no discussion whether this corridor connects to the depot or not. It should be an automatic. The question is, it goes from Minneapolis to the depot, and then how do we make it work? How do we make it cost-effective and efficient? My board, and I come here just coming from a rail authority, a unanimous board, to let you know that we, and in our memorandum of understanding with the Met Council, it must go to the depot. There are no other options. A second phase is unacceptable. This is about the vision we have for the metro area, not for today, not for 10 years from now when the line's going to build, but for 50 and 100 years from now. It has its impact on the region, not only on the city of St. Paul and Minneapolis, but on the East Metro region and indeed for the state, because eventually you have Duluth connecting to the depot. We are going to be very stubborn about this. I just want to be honest. And I've had discussions with Chairman Bell. Peter and I have been known each other for over two decades. And he needs to champion what he thinks is necessary. And I just want to let you know Ramsey County is going to champion what its vision is. And I just want to put that on the table. Having said that, we're here to request what we need in the next 2 years for the Central Corridor. And that's roughly $140 million in the state share. We're requesting $40 million this year and $100 million next year. This is going to be critical because in order for the Met Council to have a full grant agreement to move on in terms of construction of the line, these dollars have to be in place, along with our local share between Hennepin and Ramsey. So that is our request. I won't belabor the point any further, and I'm willing to answer any questions. Thank you so much.
Why don't you go ahead, and then we'll open it for
questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am Larry Dowell. I'm the president of the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce. Represent over 2,000 members in the East Metro marketplace primarily. I'm also the managing partner with the Central Corridor Partnership since 2004 when it was organized, quite frankly, to help push this project along. That partnership is a business-led and business-driven partnership, and we're proud that business has made a difference in this project to this point. We're proud to represent business interests on the Central Corridor issue over the past two or three years, and we're in for the long haul to see this project built. We're here to support the $40 million request in emergency bonding this year. We agree with the County Commission as it relates to the bonding bill or other resources next year for the state share, total state share of $140 million. But I also wanted to be just briefly indicate that this is a jobs and business issue for our marketplace. It's less about aesthetic and other issues, economic development issues, et cetera. It is about moving people and, for that matter, goods, because every spot on the freeway opened up from a car, we then can move product through the marketplace. So this is a jobs issue. This is an economic development issue. It is a commercial issue, a commerce issue, and I'm proud to indicate that the business community is fully supportive of this development as rapidly as we can put it together. So I thank you for allowing me to testify today. And again, pledge that the business community has come along a long way on transit. And on this particular line, we started off with limited business support. And 3 years later, I'm proud to say that we have the majority of our marketplace in favor of this project from the business community.
Any questions? Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Ortega, your words aren't falling on deaf ears. There's many of us from all across the state that believe that the logical endpoint is the Union Depot. I should say the starting point is the Union Depot. And talk of not having that as part of the project is happy.
Okay, any further questions or comments? Okay, thank you. Okay, next will be local bridge bonding. Start off with Rick Jonas, state aid engineer. In looking back on previous bonding bills, in the off year for bonding, usually we have had some money for bridge bonding. They are already through the money we gave them last time, and so hopefully there'll be something this time. But okay. Go ahead.
Senator, members of the committee, my name is Rick Jonas. I work for MnDOT's Division of State Aid for Local Transportation, and we administer the local bridge replacement program. I'm happy to report that last year's appropriation of $55 million has all been awarded to local units of government. Money was received by us from the sale of bonds in May, and by the end of June, we had all the award letters out, and the money was committed. People knew who was getting the funds and which bridges were able to move forward. There was 199 bridges that benefited from those funds. 2.5 was specifically earmarked for the design of the Lowry Avenue Bridge, which is a very large and expensive bridge. And $7.5 million was set aside for some projects that will be let later this year that are combined with some federal funds. There was other bridges built during the last year using that did not use bond funds. That is not the only source of funding available. We have town bridge monies. Sometimes communities decide to use their own local funds or state aid dollars. All total, there was $60 million spent on the replacement of bridges, just the construction costs, and a total of 205 bridges replaced last year. At this time, the program is without money except for the $7.5 million that are set aside for this summer's federal projects. We are starting a waiting list. We have 17 bridge plans on our desk, completely signed, ready to go to letting if money would be available. And we've been told by local units of government that they would, in fact, based on their own five-year bridge replacement plan document, capital improvement documents that they send to us yearly, that there are 714 local bridges that, if money was available, that they would like to replace this summer. That's kind of a recap of how the money was spent last year. And as Mr. Chair said, this is not a bonding year, and MnDOT is not here asking for any more money, but it is an update of how quickly we were able to spend the money we received.
Anybody who's under the governor's thumb doesn't come and ask for money, but that doesn't mean that others can't. Senator Foley.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman Langston. Can you tell me what criteria you use to determine where the bridge is inadequate or defective or whatever it is, and how that possibly endangers somebody's life? What's the status of these bridges that we're talking about here?
Senator, Mr. Chair, the law requires, and every county has a registered professional engineer trained in bridge inspection. All bridges are inspected annually, and that's a safety inspection. And if the bridges are not safe, they are closed, or they are weight restricted and signs erected. That's very important to do in a situation like we have with a number of aging bridges that are over 50 years old, many 70 years old structures on these local roads. As far as developing deficiency, on roads that have rapidly increasing traffic counts, bridges can become what's called functionally deficient. They're just too narrow. They're just not adequate. Maybe something with the drainage system has caused the bridge that to be inadequate. But most often when we refer to deficient bridges, we're talking about structurally deficient. They have weight limits on them that are not appropriate. The investments in the road and the need of commerce is greater than that bridge can bear. Once that structural deficiency, the individual members, the beams, the floor, the abutments, the piling, reach a certain age or certain deterioration measured by the inspectors, they go on a deficiency list. Then the local units of government take their list of deficient bridges and arrange them in local priority order and begin working on them, and they send us copies of a five-year plan. And as they work with that five-year plan, typically they go ahead and take the first several years of projects on their list, and they start with the engineering work. And as they do that, state aid sends our district state engineer out in the field to meet with them and take a look, make sure that they're looking at economical alternatives, taking advantage of opportunities to abandon the bridge and replace with the road, modify the road system. But safety is of prime concern here. I would make one reminder of something that happened a couple years ago when weights on local roads were increased with the Timber Haulers Bridge bill. There was 900 bridges that we had no information available based on the fact that these were old designs, if they would be able to handle the new Timber Haulers trucks. And we immediately went out and redid the inspections and had to post several more bridges, weight-restricted, no Timber Haulers trucks. Safety's prime consideration. It's a shame that we have so many deficient bridges that we have to spend so much time inspecting and re-inspecting, but that's the way it is.
Okay, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jonas, right?
Jonas,
okay. How many bridges did you say were in serious need of repair? 700 and...
Senator, Mr. Chair, I did indicate that we have, from this master list that counties have compiled and sent to us, that there are 714 bridges on local priority lists that, if money was available, they would like to replace in the year 2007. There are over 2,000 deficient bridges in Minnesota. 87% of those are on local roadways.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then of those over 2,000, do you have a ballpark guess of how much it would take to bring all these bridges up to satisfaction?
Senator, Mr. Chair, I would hesitate to guess. I could talk to the fact that in last year's program, $60 million was spent on replacing bridges, and a total of 205 bridges were replaced last summer using combined local dollars, town bridge account dollars, and a total of $60 million on that 200 bridges that was replaced last year.
About $300,000 a bridge. So if you're talking to 700 and some, maybe talking 200 and some million, maybe, or something like that.
And Mr. Chairman, the governor recommended how much for bridges this year?
Zero.
Okay, that's what I thought. Well, Mr. Jonas, then. Who's currently doing the bridge inspections, not only in the metro area, but also in greater Minnesota?
Senator, Mr. Chair, bridge inspections are done by the county engineer on the local road systems for the townships and the cities and the counties. MnDOT does its own bridge inspections.
Okay, and MnDOT does not contract out any of those bridge services?
Senator, Mr. Chair, MnDOT does contract out on special cases.
All right, and what was the? I know what the design and preliminary design on the Lowry Street Bridge is, but is there any cost estimates on the total replacement of the Lowry Street Bridge?
Senator, Mr. Chair, I have heard construction estimates for the bridge structure itself in the neighborhood of $30 million. That would also require some adjustments to the street that increased the entire project costs, and I haven't received a recent estimate on that. I think with the design, better estimates would become available, but we're talking, all said and done, from the testimony last year, $30 million plus project for construction.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to be doing the same thing in the Transportation Committee, and when it comes time, if you could firm up some of those numbers, especially how much it would take to, make a good run at those 2,000 bridges, we'd appreciate it.
Last year when the request came in for the Lowry Street Bridge, they wanted the $2.5 million for its design and pre-engineering or something, and hope to get federal money for the rest. Well, I don't know, maybe Mr. Oberstar can help us out on that. I'm not sure. There's another one coming this year, which is somewhat the same deal. But to take those huge projects out of this particular deal is really tough. 2 years ago, up at north here near St. Cloud someplace, there was one bridge that came to almost half of the money of the $40 million. We actually slipped that particular year, which we had always been gaining a little bit. But when it comes to some of those huge projects, I'd like to see money coming from some other source other than this particular program. Sure. Senator Metzen?
Mr. Jonas, in your priority projects, was there consideration given to the geographical balance that I'm thinking of in the metro area specific? I see, for example, District 39, 38, 40, 37, 36, 56, 52, 55, 53, 66. There's not a project in those Senate districts. It seems to be, to me, skewed to the western suburbs, much like the mass transit initiatives have been the last 15, 20 years. I see there might be one project in District 57, but does that mean all of our bridges are in excellent condition out our way or on the eastern side, the eastern metro and the south metro? You look at the map and there's 20 projects west and there's four or five what I call east in Washington County, Anoka County, Dakota County. And maybe the answer is they don't rise to the level, or maybe we have excellent bridges out there. Senator Sieben and I and the others have been doing such a good job that these bridges are all in. But it seems skewed to me. Can you answer that? Is there a geographical balance? And it doesn't appear to me that there is.
Senator Metzen, Mr. Chair, I don't think there's geographical imbalance in the program other than the fact that the location of bridges may be geographically unbalanced as you approach counties that are along major river tributaries. The local bridge system has more bridges. Southeast Minnesota is where a lot of the bridges are, but there are pockets of very large bridges. You did receive a packet of maps today, and one of the maps,
Chairman, that's what I'm referring to. And there's a void over at our side of the area.
Sure, the map that was produced that goes along with my testimony shows the location of the 2006 bridges that were replaced. There is, for Carol Loverell's testimony, a 2007 map. Now, keeping in mind that where there is existing bridges and where those bridges are deficient and where they've been prioritized as in need of replacement by local units of government, lists are developed. That's strictly based on the need of the bridge and the commitment of the local units of government to invest some of their money and time in developing a project and with the hope of receiving either federal or bridge bonding money along with their project. So the location of where those deficient bridges are is a major factor.
Well, Ms.
The Rakota Bridge, of course, is big time in that area, but that isn't.
We're not talking about that one.
Well, you talked about balance, so I thought let's balance it. That isn't a local bridge. That comes obviously from
DOT.
That's
a statewide significant bridge.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, so is the light rail on Robert Street, too.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, well, this kind of goes to my point here is that And Mr. Jones did a good job of saying it twice, I believe, that there is some local cost share on a lot of these projects. We've done such a good job of funding transportation that, you know, where you see Senate District 39, 38, 40, 37 down this way, that's Dakota County. And, you know, if I wish there was a Dakota County commissioner here, because they could tell you how much money that they've been getting from the state lately. And it's not much. It's not anything. And, you know, so that's the job that we've neglected to do on behalf of the counties. Ms. Loverell is probably going to speak to that issue. But that's why you don't see any bridges down there in your neck of the woods, Senator Metzen, is because we've done a good job of starving some of these counties, and one of them happens to be Dakota County that has more needs right now than these other counties around them do, but they still get very little money, if any at all, from the state.
We better move on here. Carol Loverell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, my name's Carol Loverell.
Just a minute, Senator Berglund.
I just wondered if I could get either a description of the projects for 06 and 07 that are in Minneapolis. They kind of look like they're at the same exact location. I'm sure they're not. If I could get a copy of the list.
But, you know, those of us from the rural area will have to admit that this is more of a rural program than it is a metro. There's so many rural bridges out there. But, of course, when we talk about Central Corridor, that doesn't exactly come to my district. But we try to balance these things off as best we can. But there's never enough money for all the things we want to do. But go ahead,
Thank you, Loverell. Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Carol Loverell. I'm the Transportation Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. And as you've heard, Minnesota's local bridges are a critical component of the overall transportation system. They provide access to markets for agricultural products, manufacturing products, and the multitude of services that link our economy together. Counties are responsible for over 7,000 bridges in our two local systems. Maintaining a level of funding is crucial to the success of this program. Many bridges on the local systems were built 50 to 70 years ago, as you heard Mr. Jonas testify to, and at the end of their useful life. They are either structurally or functionally deficient. This backlog of deficient bridges continues to grow, and the cost to bring them up to standard continues to increase. One of the factors contributing to the deterioration of bridges' useful life is having to accommodate heavier trucks and larger farm equipment. While counties have the ability to post their bridges, the postings are not that well enforced. And if the posting is honored, it causes an undue hardship to haulers as they have to navigate around road systems, causing lost time and productivity. This is why it's so important to be able to rehabilitate or reconstruct these local bridges and make sure they're up to current standards. We are here today to advocate for increased revenues for the local bridge program this session. The local bridge program has been a resounding success because it assures you as legislators that the authorized funds will be spent as soon as the funds become available. Local units of government submit resolutions, if you heard Mr. Jonas testify to MnDOT's Office of State Aid, requesting funding and committing that the project is ready to go. Counties submitted resolutions totaling over $100 million last session in fiscal year 2006. The bonding bill, House File 2959, provided $52.5 million in GO bonding authority for the local bridge program. This was the largest amount of funding that the program has received from a bonding bill. The funding was all spent within a month of it being appropriated. While this funding was greatly appreciated, there is almost $50 million worth of additional unfunded projects left from the request from last session and another $8 million worth of new requests that are ready to go during this next construction season. The maps that have been made available show where the projects are that need to be funded and also another map of the projects that were completed this last construction season. The information that is provided is the reason that the Association of Minnesota Counties is proposing an additional $50 million this session for the local bonding program. and I would be happy to stand for any questions.
Okay. We're going to have to move along here. Senator Foley.
Yeah, Senator Langseth and Ms. Loveris, I'm pleased to note that you did raise the issue that mere posting isn't the answer, that, as a matter of fact, the enforcement on truck overweights and those things is pretty poor, and it has been for years, so I'm not sure that that's a good criteria to use. It seems that somebody ought to be looking at the actual safety of that and taking from there. So I know from past experience that the overweight business is not well handled, and it's not the fault of the people involved. It's just the inadequate numbers.
Okay, we're going to have to move along. Okay. Go ahead.
My name is Alan Forsberg, county engineer in Blue Earth County, Mankato, Minnesota. I've been the county engineer in Wabasha County for 3 years and now in Blue Earth County for 18 years, working with roads and bridges. I'm also chair of the Minnesota County Engineers Bridge Committee. I heard once that everything is worth nothing unless you can get it to the right place, and that's often across the river. Bridges do that. In greater Minnesota, where most of these bridges are located, I feel the land is actually becoming more intensively used. In many cases, our agricultural production has increased 2 or 3 times per acre, with corn, for instance. We're developing ethanol plants, and we're developing more feedlots, and this all requires more hauling and heavier freight loads on our bridges, which has created a real problem for our bridges, especially where we have weight-posted bridges. The folks that live out there, too, Dr. Adams, a geography professor at the U, once said that people who live in the country are just like people who live in the city. It's just that their houses are further apart. And so these folks, often the man and the wife, both work in town to supplement their income. Their children go to school in town. They need roads and bridges to access their education and recreation and cultural opportunities that's there. I think Mr. Jonas and Loveroe have done a wonderful job of providing the big statewide picture of bridges. What I'd like to do is, from my perspective, show it where the rubber hits the pavement, so to speak, on the county level where we actually build, maintain, and work with these bridges. I believe we have an excellent system for managing our bridges in the state. We have a federally mandated and state-administered bridge inspection program. Counties inspect the local bridges under state law every year or every other year, depending upon the particular type of structure. The rating for the bridge is based on a federal PONTUS rating system, where a trained certified inspector will go out and inspect every element of the bridge, insert data into a database that's calculated to show us efficiency rating for that bridge. Bridges are only eligible for replacement if that PONTUS computerized system shows that it's lower than a certain sufficiency ratio. So these are bridges that definitely need to be replaced. We have trained and certified inspectors for both the safety inspection and for the construction process in the contract administration to ensure it's done in a quality, efficient way. I believe we are building durable, quality bridges that meet today's needs and tomorrow's needs. We have learned to avoid some of the problems in the past that have resulted in shorter bridge lifespans than we would like, such as scour and erosion of the foundations, and we're using epoxy-coated rebar to prevent the rebar, the steel reinforcing, from rusting and spalling off the concrete, thicker concrete over that rebar. We're using precast concrete pipes and boxes where we can, where they're feasible. Gives us a good product at a lower price, faster installation. We're using concrete and steel predominantly with limited use of timber, which generally has a lower lifespan. And we're also exploring ways to build bridges cheaper and faster and more durable, looking at bridges done in other states as part of a scanning project that I've been working with. The problem is that the replacement funding tends to start and stop, resulting in an inefficient way to build bridges, and also has not been sufficient to prevent a backlog of these deficient bridges from growing. Constructing a bridge is a pipeline of activities where you need to have the planning and the permits and right-of-way acquisition, design approvals, and finally the construction. If you interrupt that process by not having funds for construction, you stop and start, which introduces inefficiencies. with that, what I would like to do is show you an example of some bridges in Blue Earth County, and I believe some photos were handed out earlier and should be on your desk to bring it down to reality, what we're looking at for replacing in our county if funds were available. The first one on the pile is County Road 168 Bridge, south of Pemberton in Blue Earth County, a farm-to-market bridge, a school bus bridge, fire trucks, and then used by the population for their accessibility. This bridge has a couple of problems. The timber piling is rotting, the pier caps is crushing, and then these particular concrete precast pieces that were used, the concrete is falling off the rebar, allowing it to rust and deteriorate. That bridge needs to be replaced. Second page actually is a township bridge in Ceresco Township. Under state law, we do the inspection, and we also assist the townships with the replacement process. It's a very old bridge, built in the 20s. It's very narrow. You can see one of the railing pieces hanging over the side. It's very weight-restricted, restricting traffic there for farm-to-market and school buses and fire trucks. This bridge is designed and would be ready to go to construction this summer if funds were available for contracting for the work. The townships in our county have to participate in the cost of these projects with half the engineering, removing the old bridge, and the approach is up to $10,000 costs. They don't have a lot of money. If it's worth it to them to proceed, it's a message to me that it's a bridge that needs to be replaced. The next project is on the county highway system. The bridge is deteriorated, carrying Minneopa Creek out of Lake Crystal and from Minneopa Park. Actually, there's also a safety problem here. You see the mainline Union Pacific Railroad and next to the stop sign across with a memorial there. The bridge we would like to build would cross over the creek and the railroad track, improving safety as well as providing a good railroad crossing. That bridge is ready for construction. It's designed, ready to go. Lake Crystal, we also help the small cities under 5,000 with their bridges. They have four bridges over a stream that flows through the middle of town. This is an example of one bridge where the timber piling and the pier caps are rotting. Very poor condition. We'd like to get this bridge replaced within the year if possible. Next, McPherson Township. It's a steel pipe. The criteria calls for a structure 10 foot or more in span. This one is not 10 foot, but if you do the hydraulics on it to adequately accommodate flood flows, it would be 10 foot, and so therefore it's on the system. If you go inside that pipe, it's very rusted. The haunches at about the quarter points are cracked, and so we will be weight posting this bridge if we can't get it replaced, this pipe. Cambria Township, another example of a farm-to-market school bus fire route, which is very weight posted and can't be used for those purposes now. Rotting timber piling and a pier cap that's crushing. This bridge is designed and ready to go. And then the final example of another bridge, Rapidan Township. The middle pier here has scoured and is settling. Since this picture was taken, the bridge has been closed to traffic. When we look at these bridges, we look at the possibility of eliminating the bridge if the detour is not too great. And so we have closed some bridges and constructed road in lieu. But in other cases, you just need a bridge to get across the river.
Okay, thank you. We're going to have to move along, but townships would like to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dave Fricke, Executive Director for the Minnesota Association of Townships. I'd like to just back up what our county engineer just said regarding the town bridges in our state. Of the bridges that they've mentioned, we have on our road system, which the townships take care of about 59,000 miles of road in Minnesota. We have about 6,000 of those bridges. And the map that I handed out with the rest of your handout shows that of those 6,000 bridges, we still have 840 of them on the deficiency list. Those 840 bridges, I was told this morning, the cost on those, estimated cost, about $55 million to replace those bridges. The towns get some money for our town bridge account. As was stated, we get very little money from the state, and we have to cough up our local shares to be able to build these. A lot of the smaller bridges we put in about $20,000 into the bridge for a small township. And so it's a considerable amount of money for the bridge approach work, for engineering, and for taking out the old bridge. So that's a quick update. We're very much interested in the safety issue, not only for our bridges, but the signage program and that you'll be dealing with, and signage on the bridges as we work with MnDOT when the timber hauling issue came about, because we didn't want them in the drink, want to be able to cross safe bridges. And a few of you that get to your fishing holes up north generally cross a whole bunch of township bridges. And so we'd like to have them safe for you, so you don't go in the drink like those people going out on the ice lately and sinking a few cars out there. But we appreciate your help, and we do have a severe need here. Last year, we built about $17 million worth of township bridges. 85 of the bridges that were built last year were township bridges. And so we thank you and thank the county engineers for all of the help. We've got a major program out on our township road. So,
okay, thank you. We're going to have to move on to Rice Street Bridge, Ramsey County. This is a request for a separate bridge. Senator Wigger, were you going to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. The Rice Street Bridge is now scheduled for replacement in 2024. And unfortunately, we are in a situation where St. Jude Medical, who is to my right and will testify, they're looking at expansion, hundreds of jobs, and this is a big obstacle which, if not addressed, could have a dramatic impact on their plans as well as other area businesses. I'll point out as well, this bridge has a F rating through the county. It also is a two-lane with visible rebar. The need is clear, and we have legislation which we deeply appreciate your considering. And I'd like to yield to Angela Craig, the Vice President of Corporate Relations at St. Jude Medical, and Jeff Drews, Senior Facilities Manager at St. Jude.
Thank you very much. My name is Angela Craig, and this is Jeff Drews. He is the Facilities Manager for St. Jude Medical, and I'm responsible for Corporate Relations. I'd like to offer St. Jude Medical's support to the matter before the committee today to fund the design phase of the project to replace the Rice Street Bridge over Highway 36. We are one of many businesses in the area whose customers, visitors, and employees cross this particular bridge every day. And we think that the current infrastructure represents both a safety and a quality of life issue and is a factor for us in considering additional expansion in this area. If you'll indulge me for just about 60 seconds, I'd like to bring the committee up to speed on the recent growth of St. Jude Medical, our recent expansion in the area, our general hiring trends in Minnesota, and finally, a project that we are currently considering. St. Jude Medical is fortunate to have grown its sales rapidly over the past year, as we've been able to help many, many people with a number of heart conditions. We expect that our growth will continue to expand and that we will continue to be successful as an organization. Our corporate headquarters, our international headquarters, as well as a significant portion of our cardiovascular division, is located in the corridor most often reached from the Rice Street Bridge from Highway 36. In total, we have approximately 2,100 employees in the Twin Cities area. About 700 of these individuals work in the Little Canada, Rice Street, Maplewood area affected by these transportation infrastructure concerns. Our total employee population on average has grown about 10% per year in the Twin Cities, and we've seen particularly strong expansion within the research and development, engineering, and other professional positions here. For 2006, we estimate the total base payroll for the Twin Cities employees was just over $133 million. Our footprint in the United States extends to additional locations such as California, Texas, South Carolina, Puerto Rico. In Minnesota, we have sites in Minnetonka, Maple Grove, and in South in St. Paul. With respect to the Rice Street Bridge, we opened a 100,000 square foot expansion of our cardiovascular division last year on the south side in the Maplewood area in our Woodridge Technology Center, where we manufacture our heart valves. This allowed us expansion in this division and freed up space to move a number of positions from the corporate headquarters site in order to allow for additional headcount expansions there. In all, we estimate that the expansion has increased pressure on an already stressed transportation infrastructure. St. Jude Medical is currently evaluating an additional site in the area for possible expansion. We envision that primarily research and development, engineering, and additional professional positions may be based at this new site near our corporate headquarters in Little Canada. Approximately 350 employees could occupy phase one of the project, with expansion room for approximately this many more. A concern in evaluating this site and the pace of our expansion plan is the current transportation infrastructure in this area. The current timeline to replace the bridge by 2024 simply won't support the growth of the company. We sincerely hope that you'll consider funding the design phase so that the progress can be started now. We regard Minnesota as home, although my accent may say not, and a place we'd like to consider additional expansion. Thank you.
We have to be out of here for another committee meeting pretty quick, but if you got some further comment?
I don't.
I mean, the gentleman next to you?
I represent the gentleman, too.
Oh, okay. Okay. This is